Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show. Welcome back, folks. Today's guest is Dr. Mindy Pelz. She's a chiropractor. She's a best-selling author, a keynote speaker, a nutrition and functional medicine expert, and she has spent over the past two decades helping thousands of people successfully reclaim their health. She is a recognized leader in the alternative health field and a pioneer in the fasting movement, teaching the principles of a fasting lifestyle, diet variation, detoxification, hormones, and much, much more. She's got this amazing YouTube channel, which combines the latest science with practical lifestyle tools that every single person can use to reset their health. We did talk today. We focused very much today on The Menopause Reset, which is a book that she has coming out in, it's now early April, so it's coming out any day now. And I got to read this book, and I got to tell you guys, it is full of incredible information. And it's, I think it should be required reading for pretty much every woman out there. And guys, don't go running away from this room. If you've got a woman in your life who's anywhere close to menopause or even not, like, frankly, there's a lot of information here about helping women to manage their hormonal shifts, cycles, month to month, even before they go into menopause. And one of the things we talk about is how important it is to get a handle on this stuff before you're going through menopause, because by then things start to go haywire. So the earlier you start, the better. Dr. Pelz is also the host of one of the leading science podcasts, the Resetter podcast. And she's also written a book called The Reset Factor and The Reset Kitchen. She's an amazing guest. I think you guys are going to love her. She's the best. I really enjoyed talking to her, in case you can't tell. So to reach Dr. Pelz, like I said, you can find her on YouTube. You can reach her. I think it's Dr. Mindy Pelz. The links will all be in the show notes. So make sure you check those out. And the book is called The Menopause Reset. If you're looking to connect with me, you can reach me at natnidham.com. And you can also find me on Facebook in the Optimizing Superhuman Performance group, or the Biohacking Superhuman Performance group. I've kind of flipped the name around lately, so I think it's Biohacking Superhuman Performance right now, but Facebook is a little funny about changing names. I'm also started an alternate to Facebook group on a platform called MeWe, and that is called the Biohacking Superhuman Performance group. It's small, but it's growing. And for people who don't like Facebook, I also keep it there just in case Facebook ever gets really mad at somebody or something that someone says and shuts us down. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you guys. If you get value out of this podcast, please make sure that you leave a review on whatever platform that you're listening to it on. If you're on iTunes, of course, those reviews really help the podcast to rank, and they help me to get more amazing guests for you guys. So thank you. Thank you again for being here. I appreciate you, and enjoy the episode. Welcome, Mindy Pelz, to the podcast. It is such a pleasure to meet you in person.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thank you for having me. I love having these conversations because more women need to hear it. So thank you for having me.
Well, it is, as we were talking beforehand, it is such it's an important conversation, and it's finally starting to get the attention that it deserves because of people like you that are, you know, as you said, you know, you didn't start off necessarily wanting to focus only on women, but, you know, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how all this started? Because you're a chiropractor first. Mm-hmm. So how did this journey unfold itself for you?
Yeah. Oh, such a good question. Well, if we go way back, I mean, I was a traditional chiropractor. I've been in practice for 25 years. It'll be 25 soon. And for the first 10, I was a traditional chiropractor. And about 10 years in, I started to notice that people just weren't healing the same way they healed 10 years prior. And I couldn't quite figure out what was going on. And one day I was sitting at a seminar, and the instructor said, or the guy, the lecturer said, the person you are adjusting today is a completely different person than you adjusted 10 years ago because the world has changed. And they're sitting more, there's more toxins in the environment. And so that sort of opened my eyes to really start to evaluate the world that people are living in. It's like the human body, if you go back and you look at us compared to the cave version of us, mm-hmm. we're basically the same. We're the same. We have the same hardware with a few little exceptions, but the world has changed dramatically. And so I started to unpack what is changing in the world and how is it affecting both men and women at that time. Yeah. Then when I hit my own menopausal journey, the same thing happened again, where I at 40, I had one goal and it was a superficial, silly goal of, I just want to fit in my skinny jeans. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be in the best shape of my life. And what that meant was fitting in my skinny jeans. And I was running long distances and I was eating 6 meals a day. And I was eating organic. Like, I did all the things that I thought were great. And at 40, I was really proud of myself. By 43, I was a hot mess and I had not changed anything. I was crying all the time. I was depressed. I was anxious. I wasn't sleeping. And it was like somebody hijacked my brain. And I went searching for answers. And I tell it in the book, I eventually ended up talking with a friend who was a very well-respected OB. And her statement really changed the way I looked at menopause. I would thought she might give me some magic pill that I could get on. You know, I like went to her to be like, hey, I've tried to fix my menopause symptoms. What the heck is going on? Somebody's hijacked my brain and body. And she turned to me and she said, Mindy, I have a practice full of women with these symptoms and my medical textbooks have failed me.
And it was like in your book, I was like, wow, you know, and we've all experienced it. So many women.
Yeah. And it was just like that aha moment mm-hmm. that the hero of the day needed to be me. The hero of the day wasn't going to be a doctor. The hero of the day wasn't going to be a medication, that I had to figure out what hormonally was changing in me in my 40s. And that's where I really came up with 5 different changes that I made to my lifestyle. And what's funny is here I am at 51. And at like about 47, I was like pretty sure I was going into menopause. Like I would go 90, 120 days without a cycle. With all cleaning everything up in my life at 51, I'm like, damn, am I ever going to be like done with a cycle? But I get it really regularly. And now, and it's very easy and effortless. And it feels more like my body's just winding down naturally. Cycles are the amount of time I bleed is a little shorter, but it feels more like what I thought menopause should feel like.
Yeah.
But it really came from these 5 things.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting how you describe it, right? The word easing in, as opposed to getting dropped off a cliff, which is what most women experience. And as they get dropped off the cliff, they're bouncing down the hillside. Like you have these highs and lows and it's anything but ease. But the one, you know, it's such a mystery to women. And it's always been a mystery to me how accepted it is. Oh yeah, menopause sucks and it's going to be fried, which is not that dissimilar to women, younger women with
stress.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, it's that time of the month. Everybody take cover. She's going to be really bitchy for a while. It'll pass. And somehow this is supposed to be normal.
Yes. Oh my God. So well said. And the more I've understood what has gone on with my hormones in my 40s, the more compassion I have for our teenager girls, you know, it's like, what are we taught about our hormones? Like when our period starts, we're taught you can get pregnant now and here's how you manage the blood flow. And like, that is it. And then we're never taught how to, and then, so we have these marks in our life where we're like, what's going on? And then you hit menopause and menopause is reverse puberty. Yeah. But the consequences are bigger. So I absolutely agree. Like we got to start talking as women of all ages. We need to come together and talk about how we build lifestyles around our hormones and not villainize PMS, not villainize menopause symptoms.
Absolutely. And the other thing that happens to young women who are having PMS symptoms is they get thrown on a birth control pill. I've lost count of 14-year-olds and even now younger, right? Yeah. Because as they're getting their cycles younger and doctors are like, oh yeah, you don't like the pimples and they've got horrible cramps and sometimes legitimately like debilitating cycles.
Yeah.
And instead of going in and helping them, I think your next other book has to talk to them.
It is.
Helping these young girls, because guess what? If they get a handle on it when they're starting their cycle, not only do they not have a lifetime of miserable PMS to look forward to, but that easing into menopause is going to become the norm instead of the other norm that we're all sitting there looking at going, my God, this is a freak show.
Right. It's so true. And how many young women, I mean, if you stop and you look at like the makeups they're putting on and the anxiety they're going through, the crappy food they're eating, and they just don't have any connection. There's no connection to our hormones. Everything is just outside circumstance. Like, I mean, last night I was watching the Grammys and my 18-year-old son and I were looking at some of the performances and talking about what a horrible message that is to women. Mm-hmm. And I think our younger generation that's coming up right now is so disconnected from the beautiful part of our hormonal system. And like estrogen, you know, like estrogen makes our hair full and it gives us like smooth skin. And when we have estrogen at our peak, we're great conversationalists. But are we taught that? And are we taught that progesterone is the hormone that calms us? And the week before our cycle, we could eat certain foods. We could take care of ourselves in a way so we don't have as much anxiety. Those are kind of conversations that I feel like women of all ages need.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so let's talk a little bit about that. This whole idea of using food to support your cycles and to smooth the edges. Like in my practice, I've used something called seed cycling, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's in the new book.
It's in the book that will come out next year.
Okay. So it's this very nifty way of, for day 1 to 14, you keep like a jar of organic, not roasted, very fresh, ground up flax and pumpkin seeds to kind of support those hormones at the beginning of the cycle. And then in the second part of the cycle, we grind up sesame seeds and I think it's sunflower seeds. Again, like, you know, paying attention to the freshness and the quality of what you're ingesting. But somehow just this simple act of consuming 1 to 2 tablespoons of these seeds can have this amazing balancing role. But you take that even a step further and talk about a whole list of foods and this idea of carb cycling, not like an athlete cycles carbs, but, and you know, I'm going to go back to like one of my most favorite quotes from your book, which is menopause is an extreme sport.
It is.
Oh my God. I love that. When I post this interview, it's going to be front and center somewhere.
Love it.
But think about that, right? Like the carb cycling to support those hormones. Again, whether you're premenopausal or postmenopausal, well, postmenopausal maybe a little less, but certainly pre and perimenopausal as you're riding that wave. So do you want to talk about that a little bit? Because I just love it.
Yeah. And so we came up with something because, so when I wrote the Menopause Reset, it was really my audience was like, hey, how do I fast? How do I do keto? How do I work out? Like, what are these things that in my lifestyle do I need to change to match my hormones? And what I found, if we just deal with the perimenopausal woman, is that we need to look at a 30-day cycle. And we'll start with 30 days. I know some people have 28. You could be 47 and maybe have a 120-day cycle. So I get that we're all over the map. So, but let's start with a 30-day cycle. If you are still cycling, day 1 to day 10 is when your body's ramping up estrogen. So it's, and hormones, the thing about hormones is they're kind of like a dial, like a light switch dial that sort of slowly increases. Some hormones pulse. So in that first part of our cycle, day 1 being when we bleed, we need to start to work on estrogen. Now, here's what's cool about estrogen. If you're insulin sensitive, so like this is where people who are insulin resistant become have trouble getting pregnant, because they're not, if you're insulin resistant, you won't make as much estrogen. And then if you don't have enough estrogen, you're not going to ovulate. That's a whole nother discussion. But in that time period, this is where fasting, keto, you know, if you want to go on a long run, if you want to stay up all night, from day one to day 10, it's not going to bother you so much, because your body can handle good stressors and you need to be insulin sensitive. Day 11 to day 15 is usually when a woman is ovulating, and you've got three hormones at their max. You've got estrogen, testosterone, and a little bit of progesterone. Progesterone's max comes later. So in that time, just because you're making hormones doesn't mean you're using hormones. So that's a big conversation onto itself. Mm-hmm. So if you have testosterone at its peak, guess what is a great thing to do in this time period? Go build some muscle, use that testosterone, increase your strength training. That would be amazing. And estrogen is at its peak in this day 11 to day 15 period. Well, you need a healthy microbiome to be able to break that estrogen down. So lean into your polyphenol, your probiotic rich foods. Start, I always say, bathe yourself in sauerkraut. Like, and if you don't like it, do it anyways. Like your microbiome is going to help you break that estrogen down. Then when we come out of that ovulation period, there's another little 5-day window where you can start to, again, you can go into a longer fast, you can do keto, you could do carnivore, those kind of things will be okay. But here's the clincher. On day 20, you need to make progesterone. And progesterone wants you to chill the F out and get on the couch and feed it. It doesn't want you running marathons. It doesn't want you staying up late. Progesterone is very susceptible to any kind of stress. So at that time period, this is not like sit on the couch and eat ice cream and pizza. This is sit on the couch and chill out, slow life down, and then lean into potatoes and squashes and beans and citrus fruits, berries, tropical fruits. These, if you do the ketogenic diet, these are not keto foods, but this is what builds progesterone. So that's kind of what I see in my world is so many women who come to fasting and come to the ketogenic diet, they feel limitless, they're dropping weight, but they're not cycling that. And so they start losing their period, their hair falls out, their thyroid stops working, they're not sleeping. And it's because we haven't honored this time period where we're making progesterone.
That's so interesting that you mention all this, because I think what you're talking about here and what you've really identified and nailed is the reason why the ketogenic diet has such a bad rap with women who are like, oh my God, I tried keto, and exactly what you just described. My hair fell out, my thyroid tanked, everything went to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. And it's so interesting that you're able to identify it. Now, what's interesting about your book is that it's, you know what it reminds me of a little bit? You know, remember those old, and I don't know if they still have them, like an anatomy book that starts with the first page is just the skeleton. And then there's this plastic see-through overlay that might come over top and overlays, let's say, the nerves. And then the next overlay is going to add in the circulatory system. And next we're going to have organs and then tissues and muscles and the whole nine yards. And the book does this in a very interesting way as well, because we're starting with like this symphony of hormones. And I also want to talk a little bit about the other three hormones that nobody really thinks about when they're thinking about reproductive health and sex hormones. But you have this thing about hormone, but also it's about how do you now overlay this with a fasting protocol and stress, how that kind of encapsulates the whole world that we're in and sets the stage for everything else to be able to do what it does. So I love that kind of layering of information that you've done in a way that is so uniquely targeting women.
Yeah. Well, so the thing that I would say, there's two like pet peeves of mine. And one is that women don't know enough about her body. And so what I tried to do in all my books, but I really tried to do it in this book, especially it was interesting because when I went to go write this book, I knew I was writing to the menopausal brain, and the menopausal brain is foggy and hard to focus. So I'm like, okay, we're going to have to take the menopausal brain on a journey here. We're going to have to get right to the point. And so that's where that book is like, I wanted it to be a book you could pick up and read within 24 to 48 hours and you know what to do right away. But I also, the second pet peeve is that not only do we not have enough knowledge about how our body works, but we give our health power away. We give it away to doctors, we give it away to magazines, we give it away to Botox, we give it away to breast implants. Like we just start, our idea of how the body works is like an outside in approach. And what I want women to do is to go back into her body. And if you can fix your hormones in your 40s, you can prevent breast cancer in your 50s and 60s. If you learn how to fast and do keto in your 40s, you can regulate estrogen so you aren't setting yourself up for a heart attack in your 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. And so we got to give women the power back. And if you're going through menopause and you're struggling and you've been told to take an antidepressant, it's like, I just want to give you a big hug and say, stop listening to that. There's more to the story. Let's get you reconnected to you again.
Love it. I love it. I'm like bowing to you right
now. Well, no, but more of us need to say this. And we have to have these conversations, because what happened to me at 43 is luckily I have a friend group of women that are, you know, 5 years older than me. So of course, and I tell this story in the book, like I turned to my friends and I'm like, you guys, I got all these symptoms. What's going on? And they all kind of like put their arms around me and they're like, buck up, little camper. You are in menopause. This is going to suck. And I just refused to believe that. I was like, "There, it doesn't have to suck. Why? How can I make it not suck?" And that's what I discovered.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the tools of learning not to rush around, like learning to take care of yourself, learning to care for all of you by managing your stress, by, you know, women start and lose the ability to sleep all of a sudden, which is the thing we need more than anything. And
yep. So
helping them to reconnect the dots so that we can regain that restorative peace that ultimately is going to help everything else. So you talk a lot about the keto diet and its power, but what about people who can't or won't or feel that the keto diet's not right for them? Are you equally supportive of something like basically a low glycemic diet? As like, for me, the way I approach it with my clients, for people who really, for any number of reasons, it could be a genetic predisposition where fat's really not going to be their friend, or, you know, if it's a digestive issue that we can fix because that's an imbalance. But, you know, if there's an underpinning reason why fat's not going to work for someone, how do you feel about basically, like the way I do it is I will get them into a, what was it I just said?
There you go. See, there's the menopausal brain, right?
No, menopause is so far behind me, sister. I can't even blame that.
Well, you're the post-menopausal brain. Once you go through it, there's no going back.
So this low glycemic plan, but then still helping them to incorporate the fasting strategies that you talk about, which give us all the benefits. So how about
let's try to make it, let's sort of open up the discussion so women of all, whatever your food choices are, we can sort of help you through the process. And here's the way I look at it. We have two energy systems. We have a sugar burner energy system and we have a fat burner energy system. One of the things that we've done in nutrition is we've only debated what diet you should be on. And when we are debating vegan versus carnivore versus keto, paleo, autoimmune, whatever, all the diets that are out there, what we're doing is we're just staying in the sugar burner discussion. We haven't come over to talk about the fat burner. So one of the big first steps that women over 40 need to make, and this is true for, let's say you're 65. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have met so many women who are in their 60s. They're like a decade past menopause and they still have symptoms. They still have hot flashes. Yeah. And so this is why I'm like, you got to go back and correct the lifestyle and those hot flashes will go away. But what we've got to do is train women how to tap into this other energy source, the fat burner energy source. Yep. And this to me is where fasting comes in. So in the sugar burner energy source, if you don't want to do keto, totally fine. I would encourage you to stay away from like the fake foods, the bad oils, like those are going to really, doesn't matter how much you fast, that is going to perpetuate any hormonal symptom. So I would say you don't have to do keto to tap into fat burner, but if you want to manage the sugar burner system better, you're going to need to get off of some of those toxic foods.
Absolutely.
So, and you don't have to count macros or anything like that. But now let's say you clean up your diet. Let's say you're a vegan and you're really minding your bad oils. You're off of breads and pastas. You don't do a lot of cake, cookie, crackers. So you've cleaned that up. And now you want to tap into this fat burning source a little bit better. That's where fasting comes in. So stick some intermittent fasting in there. There's incredible research just on intermittent fasting alone for women, showing that women who had breast cancer, when they came out of the traditional therapies for breast cancer, if all they did was fast anywhere from 13 to 15 hours every day, they had a 70% less reoccurrence of breast cancer just from that one act alone. And that was done on thousands of women. So what they're doing is when we fast, we're tapping into that energy source. And in this fat burning energy source, your body does a lot of miraculous things. It makes ketones. Ketones will go up into the brain and they'll start to heal neurons. So if you're losing your memory, you don't have that brain focus. If you're, you know, feeling foggy in the head, get yourself some ketones. That'll help. You stimulate something called autophagy, where the cells start to detoxify themselves. So this whole energy source is incredible. But if we stay in the food debate and we never go into the fasting debate, you don't get that. Now, to finish up your question on the ketogenic diet, what everybody thinks is the ketogenic diet is a high-fat diet. I actually don't think it is. I think it's minding the toxic processed foods and sticking whatever food style you have with a fast. And if you do those two things together, you make ketones. And when you're making ketones, your body heals.
Love it. I love it. Just stepping away from the dogma, right?
And the
rigidity of you can only eat this. And the other thing that I love that you mentioned here, which is one of my personal huge pet peeves, is the food quality discussion. It's all... we've taken the gluten-free problem, which was basically people went gluten-free at first and there was like, well, there's nothing for me to snack on. There's no foods for me to eat. So of course the food industry is like, we can help you with that.
And
came out with all these horrible foods that are gluten-free, but they're hideous, right? Yeah. And now we've got the same exact thing happening with keto foods where... it's, you know, or frankenfoods really that are masquerading as, I mean, yeah, they're non-GMO maybe, and they're ketogenic perhaps, but they're completely twisted versions of whatever your body could possibly recognize as food.
Yep.
Now I'm going to ask you a question. What are your thoughts? Because I mean, I know what I think, but even in for the vegans and I'm not, a massive proponent of vegan diets, just from a human health and what we need perspective. But at the same point, you know, it's up to us to respect whatever reasons our community has for going to a certain direction. But where I start to lose the petals a bit, and I feel that it's part of this discussion of processed foods, is when we're getting into things like Beyond Burger, like these fake meats.
Yeah, I can't tell how many restaurants I've been to lately where they give that Beyond Burger as an option. I'm like, oh my gosh. So the vegan, so same thing, the same rules apply. And I have in my book that'll come out next year, the fasting book for women, I really have something that I put in there called a food value system. Love. I think we all should have just like we have core values for life, we need to have food values for life. And so like one of my food value systems is eating real food and minding my oils. The oils is another whole discussion. So if you're vegan, what's your value system? Vegan doesn't mean I'm being healthy and not eating meat. I'm saving the planet, but I'm going to eat a bag of Doritos.
Yeah.
Like that's not health. So if you're going to go vegan, and I was vegan for 10 years in my 20s. If you're going to go vegan, there's a couple of things you have to understand. So one is that you need to make sure you're still eating the right oils, and you're probably going to have to up your oils because vegan diets tend to be a little bit higher carb. Yeah. So if you want to tap into this fat burning system, you're going to have to up your oils, eat really clean food, and then again, attach a different style of fast to it. And there's six fasts that I like. The second thing that I would say with vegans that really needs to be discussed, and it really is important for menopausal women, is you just can't get enough amino acids.
Yeah.
And so what ends up happening is without amino acids, it affects brain function. So you become more depressed. You can get anxious. You can find that you have more brain fog. So every vegan that I come in contact with, I encourage to get on an amino acid supplement because there's just that diet won't give it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I've recently been diving into, I started using essential amino acids about 7 years ago. And it was actually in a little very brief, nobody actually knows this about me. I kind of went through a very brief kind of exploration of veganism through a company that I got involved with. It lasted about 10 minutes, but the one thing, what part of it, I mean, I consider myself diet agnostic. I don't actually care.
Oh, I love that. I'm diet agnostic too. I always say, let's stop being zealots for one diet. Yeah. Like there's some good in all of them. Mm-hmm. So let's be flexible about that. But anyways, go ahead. But that, I love that diet agnostic.
There's a time and a place for almost everything, right? Yeah. But that, and you learn something from every one of these crazy little things that you do through life. But this essential amino acid formula that I was introduced to has stuck with me ever since. And just the other day, I had the gift of speaking, not on a podcast. I think I will hopefully record a podcast with him, with one of the doctors who brought this amino acid formula to North America. And these two guys are from Italy. I don't know if you've ever come across them, but he was,
what's their name?
It's Dr. Luca Moretti and Dr. Grandi. And the formula is called Master Amino Acid Pattern. So it is the original formula that was designed. And as a matter of fact, the Suns formula that's used in hospitals is their, they made that too. And then they created MAP, which is Master Amino Acid Pattern, for consumers to take outside. And what's amazing about it is it's this very specific ratio of amino acids that your body needs, but in the ratio that your body uses. And so they were able to show through clinical trials and all these different studies that they did so we measure usage of protein through nitrogen waste, right?
Mm-hmm, okay.
However much nitrogen you release after you eat a protein food is how much wastage there is. Their supplement is 1%.
Wow. That's amazing.
That is like, it's spectacular, right?
It's like, just because you take a supplement doesn't mean you absorb it. It's like the hormone issue. So I love that.
Exactly. And there's no calories and there's no carbs and there's no fat. And there's, so it is macro agnostic. Fact, beyond protein, like the only thing it gives you is protein, and it gives it to you in a way that your body will just suck it up.
Love it.
It's a pretty cool tool. Yeah. Check it out. Because it's funny. As I was reading the book, the one thing that you mentioned was the 50 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. And in my discussion with Dr. Grandi, what was interesting is he was talking about, as we age, our kidney function naturally starts to decline. And so he would be, of course, very much against a carnivore diet for an older person for that reason. And yet we need more protein to maintain muscle mass in the whole nine yards. And so to them, their answer is this supplement, which anyway, I wanted to bring it up to you because I just thought 2 grams of protein to me sounded a bit low for, especially for a more athletic kind of.
Yeah. There, you know what? We've so much has evolved in the world that I'm living in. And partly because what I can do is I look into the research. I usually test it on myself first. And then I go and I test it on hundreds of thousands of resetters in our community. And then I get feedback. So been able to sort of over time see what's working on women. And one of the things, and I can't remember if I put it in this book, it's definitely going into is in the new book, and I have it on YouTube videos, is what we call protein cycling. Yes. That there are three styles of feast days, in my opinion. There's the hormone building we've talked about with progesterone. There's what I call the release valve, where you're like, I just want to eat whatever I want, but I encourage people to stay within a food value system. And the third is protein building. And what the research is showing is 20 grams of protein every 2 to 3 hours will stimulate something called mTOR. And mTOR will build muscle. So to like bounce off of what you just said, if we need to fight for more muscle as we age, then throwing in these days where we're every couple of hours doing 20 grams of protein, which is like a hard boiled egg, it might be like rolled up like turkey, you know, it might be a little bit of a steak. Like if we're doing that periodically throughout the day, that is the best way to build muscle. And then the next day, you can go into more of a lower protein day. And it's that in and out that the body responds to the best. And it really makes a huge difference. So I love that idea that women might need more protein. And yet we also first need to make sure that we don't get too insulin heavy.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's a neat little hack, if you will.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Well, I mean, you know, there's so much in your book. I'm sitting here going, okay, what am I doing next? What am I doing next? So let's talk a bit about the microbiome and the
estrobilome.
Estrobilome.
Fascinating, right?
Right? I mean, I love it.
Right?
Because I'm someone who genetically is predisposed to pushing my estrogens into the more toxic forms of estrogens, right?
So I have to be careful
and I have to, you know, watch my Dutch and the whole nine yards. But speaking to the microbiome's role in managing this stuff, let's talk about that a little bit, because again, another critical piece of that foundation.
Yeah, that was another thing I found on my journey. Was that if you've got, you know, if you've been on antibiotics, women that have been on birth control, luckily I had a mom that was like, don't go on birth control. It's horrible for your body. I'm so grateful. She taught me that at a young age. But a lot of women, if they go on birth control, if they've been on rounds and rounds and rounds of antibiotics, if they've been eating antibiotic rich meat, if they've been slathering triclosan crap all over their skin, they are just deficient of good bacteria. And one set of bacteria breaks estrogen down, and it's called the estrobilome. And it's there to break estrogen down so your cells can use it. So this is pivotal because we can use diet to rebuild this estrobilome. And this is where your polyphenol foods, your prebiotic, your probiotic. So we can even like the seeds you're talking about, like seed cycling, that could be one of the reasons it works so well is seeds will feed those bacteria. But things like leafy green vegetables, women in general need more leafy greens as they get past 40. You gotta lean into those leafy greens so you can feed that bacteria so it breaks estrogen down. You need to be really sensitive to make sure that if you're going to be on an antibiotic, it is life or death. And that, I mean, you should really think hard about what antibiotics might do to this estrobilome. So it needs nurturing so that it can make estrogen usable. Now let's put that in like somebody who goes on HRT. Mm-hmm. If you're going on HRT, you know, there's this, there's a downside of HRT, which is it can also cause cancer. And so, but part of that is because just because you're given a medication that's bringing estrogen up again, doesn't mean your body's utilizing that estrogen efficiently. And you need these key bacteria in your gut to break the estrogen down, whether it's natural estrogen or synthetic estrogen, you got to break that sucker down. Yeah. And this can all come through diet. We've really got to get back to those three. The polyphenol, chocolate, for example, is an incredible polyphenol food. But don't go buy Hershey's, go get like a really good quality chocolate. Red wine, amazing for your bacteria. Doesn't mean you do a bottle every day. Doesn't mean you go off to Napa and you buy a big case of Silver Oak. You know, you want to eat more, you want to drink more of a natural wine. Spices, olives, like there, when you start to dive, blueberries, walnuts, when you dive into foods that feed this estrobilome, now we have like really are consciously trying to eat in a way so that our hormones are more usable.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder, you know, your comment about HRT, which I think, you know, I think that done right, it actually doesn't increase cancer risk, but done right means you're also doing the work. And this is
exactly
I see so many people make, even you know, in the world of peptides that I've kind of really dug deep into over the last few couple of years. And that is people, and you know what, it's not our fault because we've been trained to believe there's a pill for an ill, and we have to break that, right? There's no quick fix. The BHRT may for many women be a really good answer moving forward, but it can't replace everything that you talk about here. Yeah. You're going to run around like your head cut off, eating crappy foods, not sleeping, blah, blah, blah. Guess what?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's interesting. A couple of times, like, so I have some good friends that are naturopaths, and a couple of times through this menopause journey for me, they've said, well, you know, we can get you on bioidenticals. And I agree, like there's some things that we use to help manage menopause symptoms that are not horrible in the short term. But what they do, the risk we could suffer from is that you lose touch with what your body needs. Yeah. So if you change the lifestyle, and that's why I put it into these five things. If you change your lifestyle and you choose to do HRT or bioidentical, then your chance of success through menopause is going to be much better. But when we put somebody on HRT and they're still eating crappy, they're still stressing out all the time, they're still damaging their microbiome, like now we haven't set them up for success in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. And that's what I'm really trying to do is say, hey, at 40, there needs to be a lifestyle shift. How you choose as you move through your 40s to manage your symptoms is up to you. But if you don't shift this lifestyle, these diseases over here, Alzheimer's, diabetes, all of that is staring you right in the face. So if you want to do it all, but we can't leave the lifestyle out.
Yeah, no, I, you know, that message is so important and it's so, I love it. That, you know, like nothing replaces doing the work. Like it's not, and you know, doing the work doesn't have to be bad. Doing the work, you know, framing doing this work as caring for yourself, as you said in the book, you know, we spend our 30s and our 40s taking care, or even maybe early 40s, taking care of other people in our surroundings and the people around us. This is now the time to turn that intention back to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so if we reframe doing the work as refocusing your attention on yourself so that you can remain vital and amazing and spectacular and start to even reinvent yourself if you want to. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, there's stats about how most of us will start another career at some point. Right.
So, no, I mean, if we just even just address, like, as we age, we stop caring what other people think as much. As our children grow up, well, most of us do, right? As our kids grow up, we have more time to put towards careers, to our relationships, to ourselves. Like this, like to me, as we transition out of menopause into our 50s and 60s, this is this is our time. This is where we get to step into our brilliance. But what's happening is so many women are upset because they can't lose weight. They're upset because their brain is not working. I keep thinking a lot lately about, oh my gosh, if women applied these five principles as they went through their 40s, I wonder how many marriages we would save. Because you know, you get irritable and it's very easy to turn outward and go, I'm irritable because my husband's not doing what I want him to do. Or I'm irritable because I've got a teenage, you know, child in my house. And it's been interesting. Like I can even, this is even like a deeper conversation, but my daughter's 21. She's my firstborn. And I've had to go back and sort of, she left the house as I was like correcting my hormones. And so she would come back into our sphere and be like, recognize that I wasn't as reactionary. I wasn't yelling as much. I was a happier person than when she left. And I've gone back and really like apologized and been like, you know, as you were transitioning out of the house, my hormones were all over the place. I wasn't my best mother self, but now that I'm cleaning everything up and cleaning my lifestyle up, I feel like I'm a way better parent than I was. I'm a way better wife. I have a lot more patience. I'm not reacting to everything. How many marriages could we save? How many relationships could be saved with just applying some changes to lifestyle?
Well, absolutely. And as your libido tanks, right?
And your right.
You get cranky and your libido's gone and everything goes to hell in a handbasket, your relationships with your kids and your friends. And it is not to shift the blame to women, but it becomes part of the equation of what happens to people's relationships. And frankly, as we talked about earlier, even it can even affect your career to some
degree. Yeah, absolutely.
How you're able to function and interact with other people.
Yeah. Well, estrogen alone allows us to have great conversations. So it makes us chatty, and which we get villainized for, right? Yeah. We're like, the women go over there and they talk all the time. It's because we're surging with estrogen, you know? So, but as we move through menopause, estrogen's starts going down and down and down, we might feel more introspective. We might not have the words that we want to be able to put in a board meeting or at work. So protecting that estrogen, making sure the estrogen that we are being given is being broken down by something like the estrobilome. Like these little hacks have a massive effect on quality of life. And the workplace definitely could be one of those.
Absolutely. Well, and as your estrogen tanks or when your estrogen becomes less available, frankly, your brain doesn't work as well, as you said.
Right.
I mean, the brain fog kicks in. And then the next beautiful thing we overlay onto that is if we have access to ketones, which are also this amazing brain fuel.
Yes.
So now the whole thing's become this superpower of enhanced cognitive health as opposed to the
other way around. Yeah. I actually, at 51, I feel like I work out, I fast, I eat. Like I would say 80% of the things that I do is for my brain health now.
Sure.
Whereas probably at 35, again, I wanted to fit in my skinny jeans. So if I wanted to go for a workout, I pushed myself out the door because I was like, well, I want to look good in my skinny jeans. Mm-hmm. At 51, I pushed myself out the door to go work out because I want my brain to work right. I want the endorphin rush. So it does, our priorities do switch and we can fall prey to a malfunctioning brain again, if we're not correcting our lifestyle.
Absolutely. And also taking the emphasis off the aesthetics, right? So it's what you said earlier, trying to address ourselves from the outside in. So what people see, what we see versus what's happening on the inside. And as a sidebar, you play your cards right. It might not be the same pair of skinny jeans, but you're still going to look great.
That's right.
there are changes to the body that happen. You're not going to look like your 25-year-old self, but you're going to rock it as a 50-something-year-old.
Yeah. Well, and the confidence, I mean, the confidence that most women have as they age is attractive unto itself. So, and that is actually another, it's funny. I told my team the other day, I'm like, I want to start, as this book comes out into the world, I want to start a campaign on our social media called This is Menopause.
Yes.
And I want women of all different menopausal ages to take pictures of themselves and be like, this is menopause, because we tend to think that menopause needs to you know, mean that we like avoid all the wrinkles on our face, that, you know, we're a certain size, that we can, you know, like, I don't know about you, but I'm like super protective of my sleep now. So at 9 o'clock, like I'm out, like, because I'm just like, I got to repair, so menopause, women who are going through menopause and doing it naturally, there's a different look. But if we open up a magazine, if we watch somebody on TV, they're Botoxed up, they've got fake boobs, they're putting on a fake facade. And the one thing I guarantee from me is you will always see a natural version. I have not been on a medication since I was 20. I haven't injected myself with anything. Like, I don't take an antidepressant. I'm not on 10 cups of coffee a day. Like, I've done everything naturally and want to move through menopause looking natural, feeling natural, and allow other women to do the same so that we don't have to keep up with this beauty, facade that is put out there.
I love it. No, it's, as you say, you know, the confidence, the exuding health and vitality becomes its own amazingness, right?
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but like, I can tell it in my clinic when I'm working with a menopausal woman, when she starts to clean up her lifestyle, she'll walk in the door of my clinic and I'm like, you're doing the diet stuff or you're fasting. Her skin color is different, her vibrancy, how she holds herself. And it doesn't mean she even had to lose weight. There's just a look of a healthy person. And especially a woman going through menopause that is, to me, so attractive, so vibrant. And if we could get all women to be like that, you know, you wouldn't need Botox. You'd find you'd be in love with your essence and your aura and who you are.
Yeah. And your vibration goes up.
Yes.
Right? I mean, not to get too woo, but it does.
Yeah. Your absolutely.
In every way it goes up, and the energy you put out to the room evolves with it. So it's a beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, I think that there's so much in this book to help, number one, open this whole possibility to women that this is, you know, what you're going through, number one, is not unique. I mean, everyone's unique in the sense it's your own journey, but it's not, you're not alone. It's not unique. And the good news is that there's amazing people like you who've actually decided, okay, I'm going to crack this nut. Like, I'm going to crack it by a woman for women so that we can not just, like your friends did, put their arms around you to say, it's okay, babe, we've got you. We're going to hold you while you suffer.
Right.
Which is,
that's exactly the way it felt. Yep.
We need our sisters for that.
Of course.
But take it up a level and say, you know what, there's a better way to do this. And let's kind of get on the same train together and figure it out and support each other through making those changes.
Yeah. Like, to me, a good friend sees the best version of you, even when the best version of you is not showing up. A good friend doesn't allow you to stay down in a lower vibration or a lower version of you. So I agree. Like, that's kind of like this book was, I wish that's what they had handed me. You know, I wish they had said, hey, here's what you need to do. But what it felt like was your only option is suffering. And we'll comfort you in that suffering. And, you know, a lot of women, we love to complain together. We love to suffer together. And again, I want to elevate this conversation how about we encourage each other, cheerlead each other, and lift each other up. We're not in competition. I'm going to outdo you. This is, hey, I'm a woman, you're a woman, you're going through this experience that nobody talks about, and I'm going to hold you through that process and encourage you to be the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, because the world needs that. The world needs women, especially right now in 2021. We need women to be their best. We are the nurturers. We are the caretakers. We lead the way with health. So right now in this pandemic where we're at, we need women to step up and be the best version that they can be, but do it through lifestyle, not through, I took this magic pill or I did this magic surgery. It's like, I changed my lifestyle and then boom, I stepped into my brilliance and now I can grab other women and have them do the same.
Love it. It's like an anthem. I just love it.
Right. We need to band together.
We do. And I think it's happening. You know, I really do. I think that it's
great.
I think that this is, it's happening, and the world's shifting.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We're shifting the world, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think the world is shifting for us. I think that by reclaiming control over this, over all of these things, including our health and our state of our way of being.
Yep.
You know, we're not waiting for somebody else to change it for us. We're reframing ourselves. And then, the whole world will kind of fall into place around it, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, if you just take your home life, mm-hmm. I mean, the matriarch tends to be the one that sort of controls the energy in the house in general. So if her energy is down, she's feeling bad, if she's snapping at everybody, that shifts the whole family dynamic. So yeah, it's really true. And this really ties into what I talk about in the book about the hormonal hierarchy.
Yeah.
And the fact that we've got these sex hormones that we're trying to manipulate through HRT and bioidenticals. But what we don't realize is what controls our sex hormones is insulin, which is why we do fasting and keto variations. But what we don't realize is what affects insulin is cortisol.
Oh, yeah.
So, right? Like, so if we're
you brought this up, because I really wanted to talk about these.
This was like my aha when I learned this. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this all wrong. I'm trying to change my hormones. And at that time I was trying to change them through supplementation. And I'm like, but wait, I got to manage insulin. Okay. Well, I know how to do that. I can do that through fasting and keto, but wait, if I'm like overscheduled and super stressed out and I raise cortisol, it doesn't matter. I can't manage insulin and then I started thinking about like, oh my gosh, but what regulates cortisol is oxytocin. So every time I'm hugging my children, I'm talking, I'm having a great conversation with another woman, I'm petting my dog, I'm having sex with my husband, like all of that is like oxytocin that is giving me the hormonal power to balance all the rest.
Yeah.
I even think I should do a whole book on oxytocin because I'm like, that's the hormone we should be going after.
So oxytocin hit my radar.
Right?
Yeah. I could not agree with you more. And it's the forgotten hormone. Nobody talks about oxytocin. And
totally.
In peptide land, I just a few months ago was having a conversation with a doctor. And she started talking to me about how oxytocin, which is a peptide, right? And many hormones are. Insulin's another one. Oxytocin mm-hmm. is actually anabolic. We don't think of oxytocin as helping to build muscle, as helping with bone density,
yeah.
as helping with all of these other things. So
interesting.
It supports. It is so multifactorial, never mind the fact that it makes us nicer and makes us enjoy the world more.
Feel good.
I definitely think that there's at least a chapter that needs to go to oxytocin because nobody talks
yes.
about it other than, oh yeah, it makes us feel happy and good, and maybe more sociable.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
this interplay with oxytocin and cortisol and cortisol with insulin, like a lot of people have figured out the cortisol insulin thing. Like the reason why so many people can't even get into a state of ketosis is their cortisol's too high, which right out of the gate, it's going to raise your blood sugar, like right out of the gate. But this
yes.
other role for this other cool yep. little hormone over here is not something that I yeah. think is talked about nearly often enough.
And think about it, like what one of the biggest symptoms that menopausal women have is sleep. So, okay, well, why can't we sleep? Well, a lot of times it's because of cortisol dysregulation. So what can we do when we get in bed? I started looking at oxytocin as really the catalyst for a good night's sleep. So our dogs are in bed with us, a lot of times they're at the feet of my bed. I'm like, come up and snuggle with me, or I'll put my hand on my dog and start petting my dog to calm my body down. Like not even for the dog's benefit, I'll do it to calm my body down. I can't tell you how many women I've heard say if they start to snuggle with their spouse in bed, that will start to bring the cortisol levels down. And I have found that if some night I'm just can't get the body to relax, I'll just scoot on over. And even just touching my husband's arm or his leg, it's like that human touch starts to give me some oxytocin and bring my cortisol levels down. So it's really a cool hormone. And, you know, women interacting, even just, you know, in this pandemic, like, unfortunately, we have to do so much through Zoom, but having great conversations, laughing, telling somebody you love them, telling somebody you're grateful for them, thanking somebody, all of that gives you oxytocin. Yeah. So there's a lot of cool hacks. We can't leave oxytocin out of the conversation.
Absolutely. I love that. Thank you for bringing that up. That is.
Yeah, no, it's what we see. What we see in our world a lot is people get really, especially women over 40, get very excited about the ketogenic diet and fasting for the weight, the stubborn weight that she can't get rid of. Yeah. And so they hop on that bandwagon. They're very excited about doing it, but then they struggle to get into ketosis. So they try harder and they do longer fasts and they go into this like almost aggressive stressed out state. And what we're teaching people like in our Reset Academy is like, let's start to slowly unwind that behavior. Let's fast sometimes. Let's feast sometimes. Let's get good sleep. Let's connect. Like there's so many things we can do here that will get you into ketosis that doesn't require counting macros or upping your good fat all day long. There's some other hacks you can use. And oxytocin really is key for bringing that cortisol and insulin, those insulin levels down.
I love it. I love it. It's so great. So let me ask you one more question before we start to wind down, because not that I want to wind down. I feel like I could talk to you all day.
Thank you.
But what are your thoughts on the fat fast that certain people are big proponents of in the world right now? So talking about how, you can fast, but you can still have, you know, a bunch of fat in the morning and still call the rest of that window a fast. What are your thoughts on you know, you're taking on a bunch of calories that kind of theoretically, in my world, I'm a bit of a purist that way, kind of breaks the fast, but.
So if you look at the research, like this is what I always tell people, like one of my favorite studies was a 48-hour fast done on our dopamine signaling pathways. That if we go 48 hours without food, it reorganizes that dopamine pathway and like opens up receptor sites for dopamine so that we, when we start to reintegrate food again, we actually can enjoy the food. We can enjoy our life a little bit more. That study, the autophagy study, there's a great study on fasting around gut repair, all of those. We're not done with coffee. They were not done with a fat intake. So there, if we're trying to mimic the result, stem cells, things like that, if we're trying to mimic the result of certain studies, the minute you add anything in, coffee, fat, whatever it is, and you say, well, it's not elevating my blood sugar, that you can still make ketones, which is great, but you may not reproduce the benefits of what we saw in that study. Like the dopamine study, they actually put people in a hospital setting and like kept them quarantined, gave them all the same amount of water. Like it was a very controlled study. So now, having said that, my goal is to get women to do a fasting lifestyle, which means you're going in and out of different styles of eating, in and out of different styles of fast. And I want people to make this a lifestyle. So in order to make it a lifestyle, it can't be rigid. So if some days we want to do a fat fast, here's two things I would say. Fine, done every once in a while. You're not mimicking the study, so know that, but you could still make ketones. And then let's look at quality fat. It has to be good fat, not bad fat. And then the last thing I would say is that a lot of women struggle to break fat down because of liver congestion.
Yeah.
So if you've had your gallbladder out, you know, the gallbladder is where we store toxins. So there's a good chance it had to be removed because your toxic load was high. We do a lot. I never thought in my wildest dreams I would be like talking about coffee enemas every day with people, but like coffee enemas help, castor oil packs help. Like you need to open up the common bile duct. You need to open the liver up so that when you actually are ingesting that fat, you can break it down. Mm-hmm. And this is another myth of the ketogenic diet is that people think that it raises cholesterol. It only raises cholesterol if your liver and your gallbladder and your common bile duct and maybe even your small intestine are really congested, then it's going to raise your cholesterol. So I'm not opposed to it. Just know, do it clean, support the liver, and know why you're doing it.
Love it. Great. And what about green tea during a fast? How do you feel about that?
Same thing. So green tea is really, green tea is interesting because, and coffee is even interesting because it can stimulate autophagy. So if it's just pure and organic and clean, then great. And it will also stimulate autophagy. It'll help you with ketones. So, and if it's going to make your fast a little easier, then I'm all for it. Yeah. Just, you know, understand that the more we shy away from the way the studies were done, the more you can change some of the nuances that are of the results you're getting.
Or we don't know.
We don't know. Right.
Compared, you know, green tea fast versus water fast.
Right.
You talk the, okay, now really for real, the last thing.
I love it. You sound like me. This is how I end all my YouTube videos. Like my staff always says, there's you gave four goodbyes. I'm like, but I have so much I want to say. So go ahead. No worries.
The for real, the last thing is dry fast. So I'm really curious about that because you talk about that. You talk about seven types of fast in the book. We didn't talk today and we won't about the fast mimicking diet. I promise that won't be the next last thing. The intermittent fasting, the 24-hour fast, the 36-hour fast, the 3 to 5 day fast, and the dry fast. So dry fasting is interesting because in my culture, we do one a year. Well, there's probably more, but I only.
For how long?
24 hours from sunset to sunset.
Okay.
And I've kind of checked out of the dry fast a couple of years ago because it's just easier for me to fast with water.
Yeah.
But let's just finish up a little bit and let's just highlight and say that, just frame this as saying, this is a more advanced fasting technique.
Yes.
So you want to go through the program. You want to ease. You want to ease your way into fasting by changing the lifestyle, changing the way that you eat, so that you can not brawl your way into a fast.
Yes.
Ease your way into a fast. But this more advanced form of fasting, I'd love to just touch on that quickly before we go.
Yeah, so the thing with dry fasting is to remember that Muslims do it every year at Ramadan, sun up to sundown. So they eat, what they do is they'll eat in the morning, and when the sun's coming up, then they don't do any food or water. And then when the sun comes down or goes down, they'll eat and drink again. Usually about 12 hours. And there's incredible research on that. Oh my gosh. There's massive research done on people honoring Ramadan. And what they're finding is things like BDNF, which is brain fertilizer, goes through the roof. Inflammatory markers go down. So there, it can reset your circadian clock. There's so many benefits to it. So that it's a very safe style of fasting if you're practicing it 12 hours or less. I think the research I've seen is you can go up to 24 hours and be okay. But after 24 hours, I mean, you should see on my social media, we get questions all the time. Can I do a 3-day dry fast? And I'm like, no. I see people try to go 5 days. We are not meant to go without food and water for longer than 24 hours max. Mm-hmm. So please be safe with it. The benefits is you get more BDNF. And then the inflammation comes down pretty quickly. I will say the other benefit we're seeing in my community is that you can get into ketosis a little deeper.
Right.
So if I put somebody on a 24-hour water fast, they might get to 1.0 with their ketones. But if I put them on that dry fast, they could get closer to like 2.0. So it does seem to be able to get us deeper into ketosis. I also, the logic behind it that actually makes sense to me is that if you're not drinking water, your body's going to go look for water and it'll find it in fat and burn that up so that you can be hydrated.
Yeah.
So, but never, never more than 24. You're really becoming, it's a dangerous move at that point.
Yeah. I also worry about people being able to release toxins with a dry fat. If you haven't already addressed the toxic load, which will have to be another podcast because I promised that was the last goodbye. If you haven't already addressed the toxic load, I worry sometimes it can cause a little bit of stagnation in the system and people will have like crazy headaches or, you know, they just feel unwell. And so, you know, how do you advise your women, patients, clients, women, fasters, when they start to feel very unwell, do you encourage them to kind of push through, or do you encourage
That's a great question.
Pull back and try again in another day? Like, how do you, what's your words on that?
Yeah, so there's two thoughts on that. The first is to remember that most of the time we do really well with hormetic stressors. Sure. So a hormetic stressor is just a good enough stress that it forces the body to repair. So I say most of the time, the only time we don't do well with that is the week before our cycle. So right. now, so just make sure you don't do it then. But if you're a postmenopausal woman, yes, a little bit of stress is good on the body. It will force your body to repair. Now, the toxic release part, a lot of women get, you know, they'll get swollen joints. They might get constipated. If you gain weight while you're, or, and I'm going to put that in quotes, gain weight, because you're not really gaining weight. You're just mobilizing toxins to a new area and it's showing up on your scale. Then you might do something like activated charcoal, where you just take some activated charcoal the nights you're fasting or you're going into more of a ketogenic state, so that you have something that binds to those toxins as they get dumped.
Nice.
And then again, this is where cycling is good. This is why I'm not a fan of, like, you know what was really interesting? We saw when I first, my YouTube channel first started to gain traction, we got so many people that were doing one meal a day. They had read Jason Fung's book. They were so excited about the obesity code. They were fasting fiends. They were only eating dinner, and they would hit plateau after plateau after plateau. And my channel was the only one. It still is one of the very few channels that was teaching how to go in and out of different fasts. And so we took these women through a 15-day, what I called metabolic reset. And I showed them how to go in and out of different fasts. And every single one of them, they were like, oh my God, I'm losing weight again.
Amazing.
And my point was, yes, because you've been doing one meal a day for a year. Your hair is falling out. You've hit a plateau. This is not the moment to go into more fasting. This is the moment to come out of fasting and then go back in. So if you're dropping weight because of fasting and you feel like you're getting a really strong detox reaction, then you're going to maybe need to step out of it for a while and then go back in, and then activated charcoal is a really helpful tool.
Nice. Love it. Thank you. Okay. This is it.
I feel like I've met my mini-me, like my twin. This is exactly how everybody's like laughs at me, because I'm like, no, I have one more thing to say.
No, there's one. Okay. Dr. Mindy Peltz, well, how do people find you? I mean, you've got an amazing YouTube channel. Why don't we, and the name of the book, and the book is just coming out. I can't wait to get, I mean, I've got the digital copy. I need the book. I need a physical copy. So I'm going to have to buy it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how people can get the book, where they can find you, how they can follow you and work with you in the whole nine yards.
Yeah. So the book, you can go to the menopausereset book.com, and there's several options there of where you can get it. It will be in print version. It will be released on April 6th in print version. So we're coming up close to that. And yeah, please go buy the book. We would love it. We again, I want to transform the conversation around menopause. So buy it, share it, you know, get it out to women so we can all feel empowered together. My YouTube channel is my baby. That's where my heart and soul lives. Spend a lot of time like looking at studies, listening to our audience, trying to hear what they need from us. And I do two videos a week that come out. And then once a week, we do something called Fast Training Week, where I pick a topic. Like, we just did a whole series on fasting for hormones, and I did 5 days in a row of like, which fast is best for insulin, which is best for cortisol, which is for estrogen, testosterone. So I tried to chunk it down for people. So there's a lot over there. And if you get lost, you could just go to my website, Dr. Mindy Peltz, and that'll direct you to everywhere. Instagram's another fun place. Like, I have a great team that they take my videos and they put them in little squares. I realize that women, well, everybody, but women especially, we learn in different styles. Some need to hear it. Some want to see it. Some want to read it. Some need the picture. So we try to address all different learning styles on the different platforms.
Amazing. I love it. And the last thing I'll say really is that one thing that people should know about the book is it's not like a 400 page,
right?
Oh my God, how the heck am I going to get through this book? It's what, like 100 and something?
Yeah, it's 150 pages. So it's like, the other thing is it's like easy to carry with you. Yeah. So like, I had a book, I traveled this this week. I had this book I wanted to bring with me. I'm loving it, but it's so thick. And I'm like, or I just ordered a book I actually ordered a couple books on hormones and they came and they're so thick. And I'm like, no, that's going to take me a long time. This one, literally, you can pick it up, read it in 24 to 48 hours, and it's easy to carry around. So I saw that because I really was tried to make it that way.
Well, and then there's the little checklist at the end of every chapter, the whole nine yards. Okay, this is it. Thank you so much. It was such
a thank you, Natalie. Thank you.
And I feel like we're going to be talking again. If
yes,
not,
please.
If not before, at least for the next book, but we will be talking again.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Here and you. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnidham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.